This is Idle Thumb 762. It's April 44th, and the dateline's in an alternate dimension.
Anyway, what did you guys play this week?
This is Idle Thumbs 26.
Idle Thumbs 57. Go to
Idle Thumbs 57. Go to podcast.idlethumbs.net/.cx.
Bat Museum.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Rodkin.
Idle Thumbs. Games, video games, video games. Video games.
It's April 118th, 2009, and this is the final dateline.
This is Idle Thumbs 20-something, and I'm Chris Remo.
26!
I forgot for a second.
I'm Jake Rodkin.
I'm Nick Brecken.
Oh, and someone wrote in and asked we should reintroduce ourselves because some people don't know who we are.
All right, so you're Chris Remo.
Don't know who we are. I'm Chris Remo. I write for Gama Sutra.
I'm Nick Brecken. I write for Shaq News.
I'm Jake Rodkin, and I work at Telltale Games Video Games.
Sweet. Telltale Games Video Games.
That's pretty much what we are.
Cool.
I mean, all of us collectively.
All right. So that's what we do and who we are. And we're back after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I was in London. Nick was in Bangladesh. And
I was sleeping.
Jake was sleeping. Good times.
Yeah, it was great.
Got to take naps at Telltale Games video games.
No, I just mean like instead of working on this podcast, I got a good night's sleep a couple nights in a row.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, I did that too, actually. It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Anyway, whole bunch of video games for some reason that Nick and I saw recently.
Yeah.
Some embargoes going up.
Yeah,
stuff.
Good old
was that
bargos.
Apostrophe bargo?
Yeah, that's
some
like
some bargos
bargo.
Going up.
Yeah,
yeah, I lifted a bargo today. Yeah.
Pretty sure that bargo's going up left and right.
Yep, right up
a bargo goes, as they say.
Yeah. So let me think.
There were some. Fantastic
well, I mean, I guess
we saw. This is a whole bunch of. Where do you start, really?
Well, I guess we can. I guess we can start with other. Before we even get to the bargos, we can talk about 6 Days in Fallujah, which was dropped by Konami.
Yeah,
and it looks like Atomic still owns the rights to it and everything, so
right.
They can just shop around, I guess.
Yeah, we don't know what they're doing yet.
Kind of ridiculous for a publisher to not. Think about this
that is...
to the point that they couldn't even project like 2 weeks out.
I know, right? Like
yeah, I don't,
it was a very short amount of time.
It seems very much like it was, we showed this game to press and ourselves.
Right. And then we decided we shouldn't actually be publishing
yeah,
it.
This,
weird.
Yeah, it was,
I wonder if we should have done that before.
It was surprising that that happened.
They could have, I mean, that game
not
was,
since Full Throttle 2.
Was the initial showing of that game bargoed?
Yes, it was.
Keep doing this.
It was.
Yeah. How long was that? Do you remember?
I think it was like a week.
I wonder. You know, if it wasn't until the actual public. Like, I wonder if game journalists just generally, well, except for you because you wrote an article about it. But I mean, I wonder if most game journalists are so accustomed to writing just very or like responding to things in a very sort of straightforward. This is what happens. Like, these are what the controls are. This is what you do, and the graphics are pretty cool. Like, I wonder how much feedback, like real useful feedback they actually got until the embargo went up.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there were certainly stories, even in just, you know, enthusiast press before that embargo. There were a couple stories, you know, just, God, I'm trying to think. I think G4 did a story interviewing soldiers and seeing what they thought of it.
What was the tone of that? I didn't see that.
It was generally negative, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Or actually, no. Was it negative? I can't even remember. I didn't read it.
Oh,
I just know that it existed.
G4, wouldn't it be something you watch?
No, it was their website.
Oh, the blog.
Their blog.
Don't you watch videos on their website?
Not if I don't have to.
Anyway, this is our asshole day.
Yeah, really. No, there were a couple of negative stories, you know, even before the game was shown, I think. I think people just questioning whether it was a good idea. Just get in on that controversy early, you know. But
it seems weird. I mean, I think we pointed this out on a previous podcast, but it was pretty striking to me the day it was announced, and you had in the same news story, you'd have, you know, Peter Tanti of Atomic being like, yeah, we're really trying to create a really piercing depiction of this battle, really realistic chronicle of what went on. And then, it, you know, two paragraphs later, you've got the Konami guy just being like, yeah, you know, we're just trying to make a fun video game. Fun times in a video game.
Yeah, games it's just a game, fun. Was the quote, yeah.
Right, exactly.
I'm pretty sure he said fun times in a video game.
I'm probably. But it's like, you know, regardless of which of those two things the game actually is, if the people making it and the people paying for it and selling it...
There was a disconnect
from
the
beginning. If they, regardless of which is the true thing or if it's in the middle, like, you want them probably to both be on the same page there with what they're actually trying to do. Because that really is going to affect how you actually try to sell the game and how you market
it. Right. Well, they don't, they're not on the same page at this point.
I guess they're not even in the same book anymore.
Yeah. Oh, not even the same book.
Thanks, Jake.
It's true, though. Your analogy holds.
Anyway, yeah. Weird story. I don't think I've ever seen this happen before.
It's pretty rapid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird to see the content of a game, not because it's like, BMX XXX, didn't that get... Oh, no, that was at the spot. What's his name?
Oh, that was like Dave Mira.
Why is this a horrible porn game?
They kept using his name, and he's like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, that was a really different funny thing.
He had to threaten them with legal action to get his name taken off the box. That was a claim, right? A classic company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Jesus. What a weird game. Yeah. BMX XXX? Like, is this because of an X in it? Why would you... I mean, probably some people remember that better than I, but I don't...
Yeah, it was a BMX game that just...
No, I mean, I remember what it was.
It had a boob.
Yeah, it was like, what a strange concept. Who pitched that? Who had like, oh my God, I've got a great idea, guys. You know,
there was that brief period where it was cool to just have FMV boobs in your game, even like years after, because there was BMX XXX and the guy game.
That wasn't even FMV though, right?
I thought that BMX XXX had like the unlockable videos instead of it being like a skate video or whatever. You would just get Spring Break camcorder
maybe. Right, yeah.
But I remember that was also the case with the guy game, wasn't it? That there was that trivia game called the guy game that also had just girls taking their shirts off in FMV and they got sued by a girl.
That is a classic tradition.
A classic tradition of like 2005 only.
Well, even before that. No, like I remember PlayStation games like
what?
Yeah,
ESRB presents.
None of them none of them had nudity, but it was like, oh god, Road Rash didn't that.
I love the ESRB presents a boob. Wait, what?
Yeah, I can remember games like didn't Road Rash have shit like that? It wasn't like straight out nudity, but it was just like, you know, you want a level. Now here's a girl dancing around.
Oh well, that's like FMV. Old racing games always do, like the Cruising USA games bikini girl wave the flag or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Or like
but this was the next level.
The off road game with the really really like janky 80s pixel art bikini ladies.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. I for some reason remember when there are janky bikini ladies in video games.
Didn't Phantasmagoria have some kind of?
I'm sure that had adult content. I'm sure there's a list on the internet that just contains all boobs in a game.
You know what? There probably is.
A boob list.
I think it's called ESRB Presents a Boob.
It's mobygames.cx. Get it? Go see joke? 1999? Huh?
Dot museum?
Dot museum? Oh, man, that's way more current.
I know. Yeah. I think it's like 2 years ago.
Yeah, man. I think, yeah.
So that's what we think about Six Days in Fallujah. Our classic end cap to our conversation.
We'll talk about it more.
Yeah, you can read about it on our GeoCities site.
Oh, yeah, they're totally shutting that down. But it's kind of weird. Yeah.
So current, GeoCities is current again. Classic reference.
Yeah, right. There
you thought you were making a joke about 1997, but you're making a joke about today.
The world in which we live.
Apparently, people have already, like, voluntarily archived hundreds of thousands of pages.
Those are all worth saving.
I think it is.
The GeoCities arc. I think it's totally
worth saving. It's like the dawn of the internet. Like, and it's a ton of content and it's all also.
You could save like 10. I'd be okay with that.
No! What?
How would you choose those 10, Nick?
I don't know.
Best GIFs.
Which, sort of randomly.
Which block of Sunset Boulevard would you preserve? The 3687 block?
I don't know.
Remember how they had that weird like street name convention?
So I didn't realize you were talking about GeoCities locations.
Oh, you thought I was...
weird reference. But yeah. Which block of, you know, of Mars or Earth 2012 would you save? Venice.
Yeah. Mars.
Yeah, the Geocities also went off into space at some point, I think, and into like fantastical well, yeah,
but you,
realms.
Right, but you didn't realize that's what I was talking about. So what did you, what were you referring to?
The same thing. I just never think of Sunset Boulevard
what
as
is
a
this
Geocities
conversation.
I'm pretty sure they had that. It was like,
okay, you're right. They did. I just
no, no, I know. I'm just curious what you thought I meant before you realized.
I don't know. I thought
Geocities.
You were referring to some weird like preserving a chunk of like old Hollywood or something.
Oh, weird.
But you were talking not about the city, but the Geo City. Right. You were talking about all of those Sunset Boulevard residents, you know, like citizens yeah. who had set up homepages right. on GeoCities.
Right.
Because that's, I think that's how it works.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think I had a GeoCity for like my first website.
I think I did, and I just tried to put an MP3 there and then forgot about it.
Right, yeah.
Why are we talking about GeoCities?
I don't know, because it's a video game, I guess. Anyway. I guess that's going away.
I guess that was horrible. Nick actually slapped his forehead.
That doesn't happen very often. I'm glad to have assisted in that classic stunt. All right, anyway. So we saw some video games also that were real.
They were real.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, people love when we laugh at ourselves. That's
yeah,
what,
I know. This is
everyone's
good,
favorite thing. They always segment. Write in and say how much they love it when we do that. Anyway, sorry, no. guys.
We're keeping it real.
Yeah, it's true. BioShock 2, Nick and I both saw that. I forget if we've talked about it on this podcast mm-hmm. before. No, we
haven't.
I mean, we have, but not since we actually saw the game.
There wasn't a lifted yeah. bargo yet.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Raise your bargo.
Say yeah. that word without laughing.
All right.
You can't even say bargo?
No.
Bargo.
Yeah, I find yourself having to say that so frequently. yeah, BioShock 2.
Yeah.
It seems cool. I mean, it's kind of one of those games where I think probably a lot of people are in this boat where I don't entirely feel like it needs to be made, but since yeah. it is going to be made, I'm glad that it seems to be like a real game.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like it seems like they're doing more within the constraints of obviously making a direct sequel to a big video game. Like you're not going to reinvent the whole thing, mm-hmm. but I mean, within those constraints, it seems like they're genuinely trying to add stuff to it and change it in meaningful ways. I mean, they've talked a lot about trying to, from like a systems point of view, they've talked a lot about trying to correct a lot of the pretty major things most people yeah. seem to have had issues with in the first game in terms of the dynamic.
Like respawning enemies and too many checkpoints.
I don't know about that stuff specifically.
I was talking
but...
about Fallout or Far Cry.
Oh. Because, I mean, some people did think there were too many checkpoints.
Oh, really?
And a lot of people didn't like the respawning enemies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you went back to,
that was
like,
a valid Bioshock yeah. complaint. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Okay. Those well, fair enough.
yeah. But,
you know, those, then that's just it's a universal complaint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in particular, this game, I think a lot of people, myself included, found the splicer combat to be very
tedious
and not particularly interesting. And,
yeah.
And I also like the idea of making some of the like kind of periodic boss battles a little more optional. Like it would seem like the actual I don't really expect the actual moral distinction of the choice you make with the sisters, which is in this case harvest or adopt as opposed to
yeah.
harvest or save. But that actually adopting in this case adds an actual gameplay element that's different than just you get a reward now or you get a reward later. I mean, you actually have to, you carry them around, you have them harvest at them themselves, you protect them while they do that, or you can just not do that. And it seems like you just have, you don't have to have those battles as often, which seems actually like kind of a nice choice to be able to make. I mean, it means you're actually deciding something that impacts what you're doing in the game.
Yeah.
It seems, I mean, it's sort of arbitrary in that they're just deciding that that's because, you know, you just do it because you do. But I mean, whatever, it's better than I think in BioShock 1 probably, when since the moral option is so muted to begin with and the gameplay option is, you know, is pretty much non-existent.
Right.
I don't know, it seems like they tried to put more thought into actually having that be an impactful decision.
Yeah,
this
that's
time,
cool,
which is nice to see.
Yeah,
also you can dual wield.
Yeah,
you can.
Well, you can, yeah. You can have a drill, you or a gun hand and a plasmid.
Could you not do that in the first game? I don't even remember.
No,
how.
It's just your same old hand.
Oh, right.
You only
right.
have one
you
hand
just
or the other.
Back and forth, right. Yeah, 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 of course.
Come
yeah.
on.
No, you're right. You're totally right. I'm wrong.
I like the...
Over one playable hand now.
What do you like, Nick? Nick likes something.
I like a big sister. I
wow. Do you?
Like life's a big sister.
What?
What?
Kid sister. No? My buddy?
What?
Never mind. Anyway, you look it up.
All right. Yeah. No, okay. Shit.
This is terrible.
All right,
thing.
Nick likes something.
You like the big sister.
Yeah, I do. I do. I wasn't sure I was going to. So like, the more they explain it, though, I do like it. It's kind of funny. It's what we were talking about a couple of podcasts ago, I think, when we were.
Oh, yeah,
was
you're
this
right.
Even on the podcast?
No, I think it was actually before the podcast. I don't think
it was after, I think, actually.
Yeah, right.
Was it when JP was here? It may
yes,
have been.
Yes, it was. Weird. How coincidental and
how
strange.
I was thinking about that, actually. I couldn't
we should describe what we're talking about.
We should.
Do it.
No, you do it.
All right. Well, we were basically talking
kidding.
About
I'll
the...
do it.
Okay.
Fuck me.
Do it now.
No. Okay. After one of the podcasts, it was when JP the Breton was here, who was a designer on Bioshock 2. And we were throwing out, like, you know, just weird... I guess we were talking about Far Cry 2, I suppose. Which is not all that surprising.
Weird.
Yeah, how bizarre. But one of the things we talked about was how cool it is, or you know, when there's a game that sort of throws you in an open world. Did we even have examples of this?
Oh, we were talking about Metroid as well.
Metroid, right, yeah. Well, we were just talking about the concept of basically having a boss that sort of was out there and sort of like a villain-type boss that was out there and sort of hunting you, but you didn't know that, you know, when they were going to attack, and they were sort of like an intelligent... you know, AI-driven thing that was just sort of, you know, kind of...
It was kind of the boss equivalent of what we've also talked about when you're playing against someone else in a real-time strategy game.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Just
yeah,
knowing
exactly.
that,
right, yes,
knowing that
the,
out
yeah.
there there
that's
is not, yeah. a character who is actually persistent
waiting
in,
to destroy
and
you,
making
yeah.
plans to just
right.
fuck you over.
Yeah.
And then when you see this person, you're like, oh, fuck, it's you. And
right.
It's, you know, where you come around a corner and run into this character who's actually a formidable
yeah.
recurring force.
Yeah, so we were talking about that, and then and JP was there, and I guess he knew the whole time that that's
his
kind
game
of
was
what
sort of
doing
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's necessarily a dynamic aspect of the big sister, but they
well, there is though. I mean,
what?
Well, I mean, it's going to be scripted, but also I did specifically ask them about whether there was a dynamic system in place, and there is. I'm not sure
in what way.
Well, it's related to when you harvest.
Uh-huh.
Well,
but
I'm
right.
not. But it sounded.
But those are at specific places, though, right?
Right. I mean, but it sounded like it was going to be beyond that as well. That huh. she would just show up occasionally.
Oh wow. Oh yeah. I think you're right, actually, because I think I asked about this too, because I was curious what would happen if you never saved a single little sister. Would you just not
ever?
Would
see
you just not have
sister.
To fight
yeah.
the big sister? But I mean, they could still do that in a scripted way, though.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, it could just if
they
you
could,
go and
but,
harvest. They could just roll whether or not the big sister shows up at that yeah. junction anyway.
Or they could just show up. No matter what.
Right, there are like four or five
efficient.
Places
right.
in the game.
Yeah.
It did sound, though,
15
like...
15 places?
From the answer that they gave me that it was, you know... I mean, I specifically asked, is it going to be a scripted, you know, entirely or...
That's
or,
tough from a level design standpoint.
Yeah.
Having to allow
so,
for,
I mean, yeah. we'll see. I
Maybe they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we'll see. But either way, I mean, they're trying to do that.
As
I mean,
a concept,
the thematic
though, the big
part of it, yeah,
right.
Yeah. is probably the more important part,
right.
as long as it feels...
Right,
like they're after you. It doesn't so much matter how they're getting there.
Yeah,
per
which
se.
Is
I mean,
what
that's
I
true
mean
with a
yeah.
lot of game design in general. But
and then at the end, it'll turn out that you know the big sister was actually just not your enemy, but was training you and was on your side
right.
the whole time as
it
a
does
test.
The, does the opposite thing of most video games, where your friend all along is your enemy. Now it's you know, yeah.
There's a couple
yeah.
games that have that
I'm
though.
So
that have the mini
that,
boss that you fight like six times.
Asked that question in my roundtable session. They were like. So how do I know that, like, you know, Tannenbaum isn't really my enemy in this one? Because you tricked me in the first game. And
like, oh, man.
Yeah. They were like, well, I don't know. I mean, you can't.
There
you
might be
say?
A
like,
plot twist.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, someone asked a question about that in my demo, too. They were like, so how is there going to be a twist? Like, what are you going to do to not make
all, why
people
would they tell you that, but...
expect a twist? And it's like, well, I mean... I don't
like
know.
The twist is all you got out of Bioshock. I don't know. That's...
Yeah, you know. That's what they tried to answer, but
yeah.
it
was a good twist.
In not so
but...
many words, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
So anyway, hopefully there's a totally sweet twist. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Showing I don't know. Yeah. I'm optimistic about the game, but
I am too.
There are a lot of things that, you know, we won't. I don't think we're going to know if that's a good game until there are like review copies floating
that's
around.
That's fine.
You know what I mean,
I
will just call
which
it
is fine.
The one,
yeah.
the one, this is the most goofily superficial thing, but the, the moment in the... I've only seen the gameplay video that was out on Game Trailers, yeah, which is, I'm sure almost everyone in the world has seen, obviously. But the and it's
obviously
it's also obviously the moment that you're supposed to notice. But the thing when the big sister goes and slices all the pipes and glass and the room just explodes into being underwater. That was like my favorite thing that I've seen in a piece of gameplay footage
amazing.
In so long.
Yeah, it was really, really nice.
It was so awesomely bold to change an internal, to change an like a contained like weird little atrium style or just single room into being part of a big open ocean environment without leaving first person perspective. Like
reminded
all
me of,
in camera.
Reminded me of the beginning of episode one with the car when you jump in the car and then all that shit's happening.
Yeah, but that's.
It's not the same. I know
that's
it's not
like
the
a
same.
Car going down a bunch of corridors. This was like you're watching.
Yeah, right.
What is usually a really hard effect to pull off of like water comes pouring in and it like doesn't cut to a bink video, which is what most games do during that. Is where
exactly,
it cuts to the guy going what and like looks up and then a beautifully rendered thing by Blur Studios comes in.
But this
is just like whoa. I guess in engine you're filling a room with water and making you walk around in it, which is,
and all the underwater shaders and stuff are
it looks really nice. So also just the notion that you can go out underwater as a big daddy to sort of as a point to take a break is what it sounds like they're kind of talking about it.
Yeah, there doesn't seem like
that's hardcore to me.
It's really
like,
cool. Yeah,
that's so exciting just because I'm a wimp apparently, but I just the creating a point of contrast like that is really cool. And also in BioShock 1, I always would paw at the windows basically and be like,
I want to go.
And now it's like, all right, fine, you can go outside and walk around for a second and then super sweet. I'm happy about that.
And I think that it works as sort of almost a metaphor in a way. It's like, I mean, it's sort of obvious, but I mean, the first game was so much. I mean, one of the reasons when I initially talked, you know, in this conversation, when I originally said, it's like, this game doesn't really need to be made. And I still think that's true because part of the whole point of the first game was that story is so intrinsically tied to the idea of this city straining under its own weight and sort of just being inevitably doomed. All right, fair enough. So in the second game, they're basically saying, well, in the first game, it was straining and cracking. In this game, it's just fucked. I mean, it's like, it's to the point where it's not so much the water seeping in and sort of slowly collapsing this dream.
Right,
it's like this dream is dead.
Whole like chunks
this
of buildings
place,
are falling
exactly,
apart and it's getting taken over by the sea.
I mean,
so,
I don't know what you do after that, but you know.
BioShock 5 is actually just going to be in the one last room. It's a weird sort of experimental adventure game.
Yeah, they mentioned BioShock 5. They said it's going to be on a moon base.
Sweet.
They said that?
Yeah, specifically BioShock 5. They're like, maybe BioShock 5, we go to the moon base.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be fucking rad, honestly.
Yeah, like, by the fifth BioShock, you're on the moon.
Yeah. That, I mean, I just want a game that's on the moon.
Moon.
I want
that actually would be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, the more I think about it.
I mean, seriously. Okay.
Right, you have,
like, full disclosure, I fucking love the moon. I think it's really awesome. And, like, I feel like
it's true.
Really,
he does love the moon.
It's really underused, I think.
I heard him talk about the moon.
I think
the
moon
is really
cool. Are
you looking forward to the movie Moon?
I fucking am. And I haven't seen any trailers or anything, and I'm not going to watch any because I don't know. All I've heard is people who have seen the trailer said it was a cool trailer.
It is a cool
and
trailer.
And I'm not going to look at anything from that movie.
So Moonshock, you're looking forward to.
Whatever.
I'd play that.
System Shock 2 was cool. I mean, the moon is even cooler. I mean, the moon
space
is crazy. Like
BioShock to the moon.
I really think the moon is a really interesting location. Like, you can see Earth from there. It's not like you're just in some abstract other galaxy where it just could be anything. It's like, okay, we're out in space, but I mean, who gives a shit? You can just pretend it's Earth. Like, you know what I mean? The moon is specifically, you can see Earth. It's there. You know where you are, but it's so fucking far away that if anything goes wrong, you're screwed anyway, right? I mean,
you can still talk to people who are on Earth.
Well, the other thing is it's so iconic. I mean, it's like
exactly.
It's a planet we've been to.
It's right.
And there are actual, or,
well,
yeah,
it's a big mass of
planetoid,
land in space.
But you know, I mean,
it's a satellite.
Yeah.
But yeah,
are, you know,
I mean, we haven't really
from,
gone back.
Like, there is that.
Like, very, I mean, it's, you know, it's
man,
still basically
slogans
like,
for BioShock 5 being thrown out left and right.
I mean, it's essentially, there's nothing that, you know, we've been there, but we didn't
back.
Really
but we
do
haven't gone
with it.
Back.
It's still not, I don't know. I think the moon is a really interesting, cool location. And I like that it's not just made up. You know what I mean? I like that it's an actual real.
I don't know. It could be a soundstage.
I don't think
space.
We actually landed there, but you know, it'd be cool if we did someday. No,
you know what else is cool?
I pretend I didn't say that because it's. I don't think Mars is as cool.
I don't know. I think it's pretty cool.
I don't think it's as cool.
Let's find it to you,
Jake.
Let's table BioShock 6 for now. And
yeah, right.
BioShock 6, Doom 5.
Yeah.
Right. All right.
Okay.
Oof. Oh, man, by the way, did you guys see the BioShock movie is apparently so expensive that it might be on hold? Yeah.
$160 million or whatever?
Yeah. God, that's so crazy to think about. because I mean,
it is.
Imagine if a game, you wouldn't even get that far to even thinking of that budget. I mean, what, like, that's so crazy.
Well, for a BioShock movie, as well, it's not like we're talking Gears of War here. I mean, BioShock sold well, but it does not have the level of penetration that.
Yeah, but I think a BioShock movie properly marketed could be a lot. Could
do better than a Gears of War movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think Gears of War, to a lot of people, would be a fairly generic.
I think a BioShock movie.
You're underestimating the 300 audience, but all right.
No, okay, maybe. I think a Gears of War movie would look more generic.
Marketed as the guy who brought you the Pirates of the Caribbean, too.
A BioShock movie would probably be successful for the same reason that it seems like people have said that the BioShock advertisements were successful, which is just, wow, this looks interesting and different.
Yeah, maybe.
But also, there's a crazy spicer.
I don't know. I think I think from the movie executive standpoint, they're probably looking at that and going, all right.
Well, it's definitely
$160 million for this.
It's a high budget. No, it's true. But I mean, you know, I mean, to be fair, Gore Verbinski did direct a Pirates of the Caribbean movie that made like $1 billion.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean.
And the Weatherman.
They do get leeway after that.
Right. Weird.
Yeah, right.
What the fuck?
But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
And the Ring.
Not that I'm like excited about a BioShock movie. Man, I don't really. I mean, again, it's not.
Finally, the true story will be told film the way it was meant to be told.
That's not actually what I want. I'm just saying. You know, I don't know. I think it could be something that could be successful. Is all I'm saying. If it's actually not terrible, which is a lot to ask for some reason.
Yeah. So anyway, video games.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. And Mafia 2. I didn't see this because I didn't make it out to that event. But Nick, you did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I checked it out.
Cool. I saw the videos of that game on the internet.
So you saw as much as I did.
Oh, really? Yeah, because I saw that first video that was just of the dude walking around town.
Yeah.
And my face was pretty much crushed 1,000 times by that video, just because it was the first time that I'd seen...
I don't think I've seen this stuff.
The characters in a city... behaving
like,
in ways
like
that,
actual
that
people
are real.
In
a
city,
I mean,
like you know, newspaper people and
yeah, and like people the selling newspapers guys, and, like and guys having conversations, like, and they'll go sit down on a bench and keep talking. I mean,
it
was
the great thing about
it was mocap city.
Yeah,
but it was really cool to see a city that actually felt that alive. Like it made GTA 4 suddenly actually look
right.
Supercomputer populated.
What I love about their approach to open world is that it's used as like the backdrop. You know, as opposed to this crazy world that you can... I mean, you can do stuff in that world, but the focus
is
more
on... That's true. It's not as much a sandbox.
It's not as much ambience.
Yeah, I mean...
Ambiance.
Yeah, it's...
Nom-zoom.
They take a much more, you know, crafted approach to open world gameplay, which I think is just...
that's true.
A little more closed approach to open world.
Yeah, I mean, they do.
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, and just, you know, following through on that... approaches just their focus on like interiors. Like if you look at like, did you watch the rest of that video? Because in the mission, he goes inside a building and it's just like, holy shit, it looks like a room from the 50s. Like there's a bar and there's like this weird like blue gold carpet and it's just like,
yeah, the actual
just screams 50s.
The
like,
design and the
crazy.
Period stuff in that movie in that game.
Yeah.
Made me really happy. I mean, I'm curious to see what happens when you're expected to actually have any agency on it.
Yeah,
like when you're supposed to. What happens?
You get a traffic ticket.
Yeah, you do.
But I mean, like, okay, the dudes who are walking around and then talking and sit down on the bench next to the newsie.
What if you
right,
try to go
and then
punch
just, so you,
them and,
right,
like,
shoot
you
them and then they that? Just all like turn rigid
right, I mean,
for like a second.
Yeah, do they suddenly
pause,
like
and then they run?
Right, the guy sitting down at the bench, they suddenly like blend up into
yes,
a stand up.
That's always
into
the
a
thing,
stand up
right?
Idle like, animation. Go, hey, what are you doing? And then sort of all of their joints bend back down into sitting.
Yeah.
Or is it going to account for that? Because the sort of the city, like the sort of ambient goings on of the city, set the bar amazingly high for the world that you're in that game. Yeah. At least in that video that they showed. Like, God, it was really cool. Yeah. As like someone who, as mentioned earlier, possibly not on the podcast, really likes that aspect of the GTA games of just sort of the feeling of place and being able to just go nuts and explore this whole city that the world has built for me to walk around in. Man, that video is just like, yo, you will be fed by this for the next life.
Jake says things like that sometimes.
I can't wait. I can't wait to dine on Mafia 2's ambient city animations.
I have to say, why? I mean... You know, I'm probably exaggerating this, but why does it seem like these games, like when you look at the GTA series, you look at this and Mafia 1 already exists and has its own legacy. Like, why are these games not actually made by Americans? Like Americans make a lot of really good games, like a lot of amazing games made in the United States, but not very many games about America are made in the United States.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
We prefer Mars or, like...
Yeah, but, I mean, it space. Seems like we do. Like, yeah. It's odd. It's an odd thing. I mean, like, the Rockstar North guys and the Illusion or 2K Check Now, I guess, guys.
Yeah.
Like, they seem frequently, like, much better observers. Mm-hmm. Or even... I mean, even...
Well, I mean, well, think about how well we've observed... Like a burned out German town or like a bombed Japanese yeah. naval fleet. Think about how good we are at that.
I guess that's true. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Good. And yeah. space.
That's a good answer. Space. Yeah. And, you know, a fantastical version of probably England filled with orcs. We're good at that.
Like Warcraft?
Yeah, that? Or just, you know, like a monster.
Right.
A monster.
You know.
Some kind monsters. Of upside down, like, spider skull.
Yeah, like monster like, consultants.
Yeah. I think we've observed those pretty well.
I think we're also pretty good at, like, dudes... dressed in leather with like 18 more belts than they're supposed to be wearing.
I think that's Japan.
I don't know. Not if there's like a spike on a car.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what is this one?
No, right, like I guess it is more that... Europe or like Japan that does weird post-apocalyptic.
Well, Japan loves
or
the
like,
belts and buckles.
I guess Japan loves those. I'm just, yeah. I guess it is.
Are you talking about like Mad Max?
Yeah, just like weird, weird, like beat up, crazy yeah. shit. But we don't actually make that many of those. Those
yeah,
end up coming
really,
from Europe
actually.
More
yeah,
often.
Yeah.
Weird.
And there's like Full Throttle, but
that doesn't
sound as extreme as what you're saying. Actually, Full Throttle is, I mean, it's fictional, but it is one of, I think, the better observations of America in a video game.
Yeah.
I really like that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I just feel like there's a lot of fertile ground there, and it's weird that it doesn't seem to be done very much by people living in this country.
Also, history. I like the fact that Mafia is, you know, that the original Mafia was set in the 20s.
Right.
And I like that, you know, this is not, you know... set that they didn't do like the
yeah it's too bad that our version of this
version
is
of Mafia
is,
and
yeah, no, agree,
yeah it's too bad that our version of this is EA's The Godfather 2
right yes right.
Yeah. Oh well,
America's yeah. falling behind the America race apparently.
Right, yeah,
yeah, the America gap.
Yep.
So yeah, all we can say about Mafia 2 is that the world looks really awesome and it looks cool.
Yeah, I remember yeah. the early trailers for that game blew my goddamn mind. I mean, there was CG.
Well, yeah,
no,
I mean,
guess they weren't. I guess they said
well,
they were.
No,
they
it's
were,
all they, it was an engine, but yeah, it was 100%
scripted cutscene stuff.
Straight up, you know, mocap camera and character movement, like Resident Evil style.
Yeah, they go out with the story. I mean, it's going to take place over 10 years, which is another thing that I like.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, they're not afraid to sort of. I mean, they're talking about how between one mission, it might skip forward like you know 5 years or something crazy. Like, so
cool.
It's cool. Yeah.
It could be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that game. That's definitely one of the ones that I've been anticipating for a while. So
yeah.
So that's cool. So good. Mafia 2. What else did we see? We saw the Bethesda things. That was a weird event.
It was.
Was that why you were in London?
Yes.
And why you were in Bangladesh or whatever?
Yeah, it's Nick... weird. They had like a Bangladesh version of this event. Yeah.
Oh, they actually had it there? I thought they did like a simulcast.
Oh yeah. Well that was the weird part. I got there and it was just like a you know.
It's a big screen TV and a demo station. Yeah.
Yeah, and then some guy was like translating into, you know, Bangladeshi or whatever.
I don't know the languages, but yeah.
Yeah.
So they showed Rogue Warrior and Wet.
Yeah.
Another weird that they picked... a classic comedy duo.
Yeah.
Weird
games.
Weird games.
It's very weird. They flew you to London for Rogue Warrior and Wet.
Yeah, well, there was some Fallout stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was the carrot, you know.
That was the Fallout?
Yeah. But,
well, not really, actually. I mean, there wasn't really any... There was no indication about what it was going to be beforehand.
True.
But, yeah. Rogue Warrior was weird. That was the game that they announced years ago, if anyone remembers that.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I remember... Were you at their office for the Fallout 3 unveil?
No.
They had a cardboard cutout of that game, like, all the way back then.
Yeah.
And that was a while ago.
It was announced in 2006.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it was going to be a squad-based tactical thing.
Yeah, developed by Zombie.
Ghost Recon or whatever. Yeah, developed by Zombie Studios.
Now it's not.
Now it's been scrapped and handed to Rebellion.
Now it looks like a first/third-person
It is.
Man, it's the new StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is like that.
Yeah.
Except without the StarCraft license or the
Ghost.
Yeah,
right. Obviously, no. But I mean, in terms of the publishing situation, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like it's
we've got this name for a franchise and we've got a couple ideas for, you know, some themes or some characters.
Well, and it's published by a company that's usually known as a developer.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'll just kick it around a couple times and change the game entirely and then release it and or shelve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll probably release it at this point. It's hard. I mean, Bethesda has a lot of money, but I don't think they have infinite Blizzard money.
Yeah, because Ghost was at multiple E3s in multiple different forms, like playable for press.
Yeah, I played it at BlizzCon. Yeah. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either. But yeah, Rogue Trooper anyway. I don't know why we're talking about Ghost.
Yeah, sorry.
Really we very love strange that. Manner.
We love Ghost.
Yeah, it was funny, actually. I actually did not know of the guy on whom Rogue Warrior is based. Like, when Pete Hines started talking about it, I seriously thought he was, like, a comic book character or something.
I know.
It's like, this is based on Dick Martinko, and he's this really crazy Navy SEAL guy
who, like, somebody they made
blew
up
all kinds of bases. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. So this is your character. Like, this is the guy, you know, your game's it's the guy you made up for your game. Or, like, the guy. I actually assumed it was a comic book
character. Did he then just walk into the room or something?
No, no. But then he started talking about how he wrote a book and, like, how the United States government, like, hired him
it's just like a Matt Hazard
test
thing.
The security of their bases.
Well, what's great about this guy is he wrote his book, which was nonfiction, or supposedly based on his experience. And then he wrote, after that, a series of sequels that were almost completely fictional.
Right.
Which I think is, you know, a nice...
A little weird, but
nice,
whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know, fair enough. The guy sounds pretty ridiculously hardcore, though.
He does.
Like, I read some stuff about him online. I don't think
he looks pretty hardcore.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's covered in belts. It's
covered in, like, fur.
What? Like hair, or he wears
belts?
Yeah,
like he's just... Yeah. It's like Charles Manson, but with a gun.
Jesus.
All right. Imagine playing as this guy.
This game is... I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say about it.
It just reminded me of Duke Nukem so much.
It did sort of remind me of Duke Nukem.
I kept bringing that up.
I mean, it was less ridiculous.
Pete Hines was like, fair enough.
It was less ridiculous than Duke Nukem. I mean, it wasn't overtly...
I don't know. I think they were... I found it pretty ridiculous. I don't think it was supposed to be. I mean, that clearly the intention was not, because every time I mentioned how ridiculous it was to the developers, like, oh, it's not supposed to be ridiculous.
I'll be back.
Okay. You know what's weird? Every time Chris stands up and leaves, I always feel like Garth, like, on a couch, like, after Wayne, like...
Wow, anyway. Wayne's World.
Yeah, classic reference.
Nice, I guess you feel like Garth.
Yeah. Anyway.
I actually know jack shit about this game. What style of game is it in general?
It's a pretty straight-up action shooter now. It's just like a one-man deal.
Is it a third or a first?
It's first until you hit cover, and then it's third.
Uh-huh.
And when you get shot, Dick swears a lot, and he's voiced by Mickey Rourke. And
so on that note, I transcribed
you've got the quotes.
A section of dialogue from Rogue Warrior. Hold on, I'm finding it.
You have to say it in the same nonchalant tone, though. Right. That's kind of the key. It's not really, you know, emphatic, and it's not...
I don't have it on here. It's on my computer.
Well, man.
Yeah. Well, basically...
April Fool, motherfucker. I mean,
right? Yeah, that was one of his lines. He kills a dude, and he just goes, April Fool, motherfucker. But he's also, like, he's killing guys, it's just less
intense than that, though. He's just sort of like,
oh, right.
April Fool, motherfucker. Yeah. Like, you know, he's just kind of...
Fuck.
Yeah.
Ah, shit.
Fuck me.
Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. Fuck. Oh, shit. Oh, son of a bitch. Fuck. Oh, shit. Like, it's really hilarious. I don't really know what, like, I wonder if they're going to adjust whatever variable.
I think they probably need to.
Like, random roll causes him to, like, say things or how frequently he says it. But it was really funny. Sometimes it actually was genuinely funny.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, like, when he tripped an alarm and a guy ran out and he's just like, oh, shit.
I actually didn't mind the fact that it was over.
I didn't really
top.
Mind either.
I don't know why they're so afraid not to, like it's weird. I was talking to the guy after I can't remember his name, the Rebellion Rebellion developer, but when we were at the Army of Two thing, the thing that they kept bringing up was that, you know, they have that like Steven Seagal test where if a line of dialogue sounds like Steven Seagal would say it, it doesn't pass the test, but if it sounds like John McClane, then they'll include it.
Oh, right.
And during my interview with the Rogue Warrior guy, I was like, it almost sounds like a Steven Seagal type of game. And he was like, no, not Steven Seagal. We prefer John McClane. I was like, Jesus, all right.
Well, I'm not saying what you'd prefer. I'm saying what I think it's like. What do you know? Like, what?
But, yeah. So it's not Steven Seagal, but it is.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, probably it's true. John McClane would probably say, oh, shit, or fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but true. He says it in that amazing worried style that makes people actually like right. Bruce Willis in Die Hard 1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He says it in a way that implies that he's actually stepping on glass with no shoes and not that he actually just ripped off the heads of 18 guys.
I didn't really mind that, though, in this game. Like, it was sort of funny to me.
That's mm-hmm. cool.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's yeah, a weird it's game. I don't really know what to make of it, honestly. And then Wet. Stuff. I don't know about that one.
Yeah,
it's Wet. Frustrating because I think the gameplay... Like, I think what they're trying to do with the gameplay, I think, is an admirable goal.
Yeah, it's kind of like taking Max Payne and sort of blending it with, like, Tony Hawk or something.
Right,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, basically...
Like, stringing... Yeah. You're diving and stuff in slow-mo, just like Max Payne, but the objective is to sort of string those dives together and do crazy acrobatic moves.
Right, and
moves
flip around and jump off things.
Yeah, and sort of create combos.
I mean, that stuff all seems cool. I can't stand the presentation, though.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't... It's this part of this, like, just thing that's really infuriating to me, how... Like, the way they describe it is that it's like, you know, it's totally like a 70s action movie. It's totally like a 70s grindhouse exploitation action movie.
Well, then the way they also describe it is it's like Kill Bill, which is right. a recreation of that. So
right.
It's kind
but
of...
what they really, yeah, exactly. What they, what, yeah, what
like
they really
two
mean
steps
is
away
like,
from that, you know,
we,
twice
saw, the Quentin Tarantino thing
yes.
inspired by the things we claim to be inspired by. That's basically what they mean. And that's basically actually what
doubly
every
derivative.
Video game is.
It is.
And I'm just really sick of it. It's like, this is a sci-fi game means, oh, we watched Aliens. This is like a 70s exploitation. Oh, we watched Kill Bill or Grindhouse. Like, I'm getting really tired of game developers watching the same half dozen movies.
Real Grindhouse movies are so boring to watch.
They kind of are.
Right, but you gotta watch that stuff when you're doing research
exactly.
because then you find all the stuff that you can bring
exactly.
up and modernize
yeah.
that Tarantino
yeah.
didn't already like pick clean.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like it was when they started showing the little intermission thing.
Oh
that
yeah,
that was just like
yeah.
Jesus Christ! Like
it's like popcorn ads from the
yes,
70s.
That is sort of accurate to like what you probably would see in that theater. But like also, you pretty much just watched Quentin Tarantino's take on
yes.
this. And just took like wrote it yeah. all down, or didn't even need to because you've seen it so many times. Like, I'm really sick of game developers making all their games based on the same filmic influences and doing it all secondhand. I'm really getting tired of it. Like, especially to hear them talk about it all the time because it's always the same movies. It's always Aliens and any Quentin Tarantino movie, particularly Grindhouse or Kill Bill. It's always. I mean, there's other examples, and I'm just drawing a blank because I don't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I've thought about it. It's just that it's all the same shit. Like it's all the same ones. And I'm just, it's starting to get so frustrating to me because I feel like that is really.
Well, for a while it was Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. Saving Private
oh,
Ryan.
God,
it's
yeah.
exactly. It's a perfect one. And it just, I don't know. I feel like that's really not, does not reflect very well on video games as a medium that they're that derivative
the
all the time. It's just like, there have to be other experiences someone wants to represent. That isn't just like you're in a spaceship fighting guys, you're in a crazy super ultra violent Tarantino thing, like you're in a slow motion action movie or like war movie. I don't know, like I hope there are other things because that's most of the games, even the good ones.
No.
And I don't know.
Anyway, sorry. Maybe we should take a break for a
minute.
Yeah,
probably. On that up tempo note.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh man, games.
Video games.
Podcast.
Video game.
All right, we're totally fucking back. That
yeah, man.
Quick.
Amazing.
Well, not that you know that was quick, but trust us.
It probably sounded like video games to you, so.
Yeah. So, Jake, I heard you got a DSi. I heard it from you.
Oh, man, I got a Nintendo dual screen eye. Yeah, you heard it from me, son.
Okay. So
how was it?
Well, I haven't, like, I had the giant, like, chunk DS or whatever it's called. The old
the
chunk
DS.
The classic huge.
Good old chunk.
The Tyco Toys brick DS
that
I bought, like, right off the bat. And I never got a DS Lite. So, for me, this is a fairly huge change. Although, it's a change.
A chunk
it's
like a of change.
It's a change in a weird direction, though, because I haven't played my DS for probably, like, a year at least.
Mm.
I think the last things I played on it were New Super Mario Brothers, Phantom Hourglass,
wow.
and the third
okay.
Phoenix Wright. But I mean, those
yeah.
all came out.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
was
yeah.
it's all
yeah,
like
yeah.
early 2008. It seems like at least, if
or
not 2007.
Before yeah. that, yeah.
So in between then and now, what I've been using all the time is my iPhone. So when I got back to opening up a DS screen, I was like, oh my god, these pixels are fucking huge. was so surprising how low res a DS actually is after using an iPhone forever. So that was the first shock. But I don't know. I was worried of the DSi for a little while because it's a DS Lite with bonus bullshit that seems like maybe
bullshit.
Someone in Japan might think is cool, but it's not really.
Like, or someone camera. In a marketing department might think it's cool.
Or someone in a marketing department might think it's cool, but they finally did what I wanted the original DS to do, which was to have an operating system that can upgrade itself so that when they... So a DS that acknowledges the internet is nice. Like, new features can be deployed. You can load games onto the system. And, I mean, that stuff is all obvious, but it was just a relief to be like, finally, this is what I wanted the DS to be when I first bought it.
Right.
When you first started out, I was like, wow, that was the first Nintendo system that I had loaded, the original DS, that had a start screen that, like, promised all these features. And then right off the bat with the original DS, I was like, oh, and this is all it's going to be forever. Look at all the potential here.
Pictochat.
Wait, there's no potential here, actually. But with this one, it's, you open it up and the first thing you see is a list of buttons of the different apps and then a scroll bar that can just scroll for like a mile away. Empty slots, and it was like, oh man, thank god, this is epic. And you can right off the bat load stuff onto an SD card. So the first thing I did was go to the DS shop, and Nintendo actually with DSIs gave you 1,000 DS points, which is cool. So you they should have done that with the Wii. But so I bought some games, bought a Dr. Mario, you know.
Sweet.
I don't have a whole lot to say other than the DS.
Does it have onboard memory or do you need a DS?
It has onboard memory. I don't know how much is there.
Yeah.
It seems.
I don't think it's much.
It's not a whole lot, but DS games are also not that big. Yeah. But then, you can play stuff off an SD card. So, I don't know. It has a camera, which is ridiculous, and an audio recorder, which
are
is ridiculous.
Are you making remixes with the recorder?
I recorded my voice and pressed the button with a picture of a trumpet, which turns whatever you say into just pure tones, which amused me because I went da-da-da-da-da, and then it went da-da-da-da-da-da, and that made me laugh. So congrats to Nintendo for making me look like lame lifestyle footage, going laughing at a little trumpet version of my voice. But it all feels a lot more cohesive, a lot more solid of a system than I was expecting. I was literally expecting it to just be the DS with extra bullshit. But the refresh on the software side made it feel like it was actually worth getting for me.
Cool.
Haven't tried to play any GBA games on it yet, and then been surprised when there's just a big solid slab of plastic where that slot was. But I haven't played a GBA game in a long time. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now you can't use your Rumble Pack. Owned.
Yeah.
Or play Guitar Hero.
Oh yeah, the Guitar Hero DS game depends on that.
Yeah, with the brass knuckles or whatever.
Man, wow, those people.
I don't think Activision was very happy about it.
That sucks. It doesn't really suck.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
Now
you can't get your Guitar Hero for the DS.
Yeah, you can't look like that retarded commercial with the two kids running around going squiddly bow, like while holding the just mashing sort of a glove. This. Oh man, you should look up the commercials for the DS Guitar Hero.
Come up with some way to get around that.
SD card
with this long
it just
extension.
Snaps off immediately.
Yeah.
Oh jeez. This cost $115.
That'll get you.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. DSi.
Is there a secret port? Nintendo loves doing that. Is there
was Iwata twisting his mustache along? No, I don't know. I didn't notice one. They changed the charger one more yet again.
Oh my god!
Guys. What? But this time it looks like an actual standard, one of the standard USB sizes, which was surprising. Maybe I'm wrong, but it looked like one. It's probably just got the two pins.
Well, the
reversed.
DS one looks like one, but it's actually slightly different.
Well, the DS one is that weird square one from the GBA.
The DS Lite, I mean.
But, yeah.
I don't know. I didn't have one of those. Maybe it could be the same charger from the Lite.
I bet it's the same one.
Okay. I don't know.
It's not standard.
I didn't own that system.
Yeah, well. Yeah, the DSi, I don't know. It hasn't, not that exciting to me.
Well,
really,
if you already own a Lite, it's a lot less worth it. But
what you say about the screen, although I don't know if I'm going to be using that system.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth, I guess, keeping an eye on because now that there is downloadable content, if a DS virtual console were to exist, that would make my pants be pooped.
Yeah,
basically. Well, I mean,
poop would immediately.
Well,
be deposited.
I don't know if Nintendo would do it because they seem to really love. Well, that was a GBA thing where Nintendo just got off on re-releasing their NES and SNES things for $20.
Right. Yeah.
But those don't work on the DSi.
Right.
So maybe they're gonna start selling them for WiiWare prices. If I could buy Mario 3 to just be resident in memory on my DS for $5, it would be bought all the Mega Man games, they would be bought.
Yeah.
No, like,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. The store doesn't even have a virtual console button right now. It just has DSiWare.
Right.
But
I would almost be surprised if they didn't do that at some point.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing is the DSiWare thing, at least in Japan so far, Nintendo's been putting out games that are called the Art Style. Uh-huh. It's like a line of games that just have really nice polish and are generally sort of just weird puzzle games. I downloaded the one that's available in the US store and I forgot its name, but
who are they made by?
I think it's internal studios and also not, but I don't know. It's a variety of different people.
Yeah.
But that looked interesting. It looked like the sort of stuff that I would like to see on WiiWare of like, here's a unique, simple concept done with good art direction.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're going to be bringing those over to the US.
Kind of like the Bit Generation stuff?
I don't know Bit Generations.
On GBA?
I totally didn't play any of those because I'm dumb.
Oh, they were cool. Or some of them are cool.
It's probably...
But it sounds similar to what you're...
It's probably a similar thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Let's
anyway.
DSi.
Hey, there's a DSi. Nintendo.
How much is that thing?
Ooh, the same cost as a DS plus a little bit of extra money.
Yeah, okay, well.
I think its price starts with a 1.
Good.
And it's 3 digits. I don't know where it lands in there.
Thanks, Jake. All right, so, yeah. DSi.
Cool. All the facts.
Verdict. I need a number.
I.
All right.
It transcends numbers.
Cool.
It's like a Roman numeral.
Yeah, 1.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's see here. We have T. Carter, who he says.
Sorry.
Jake and Nick are having some kind of conversation. I have no idea what's going on here.
It's cool.
It's cool. T writes, I just finished Gears of War 2 and felt somewhat cheated with the way they ended things. And then he describes the ending, which, I mean, I haven't beat the game, so I don't know what he's talking about. But he basically says it was possibly the lamest final boss fight he's seen in the game. Then the end credits roll. It basically says it was a total letdown. He says, what other games have you played where the majority of the experience was fun and rewarding, only to be let down at the end by a cop-out or unfinished ending? Another that comes to mind for him is Halo 2. Yeah. Apparently his name is actually T. Which is fascinating. Like the letter T.
Cool.
What are you guys doing?
Jake was trying to find that quote.
I was trying to find that quote.
It's not the specific one, but...
Anyway, so yeah, I would say that's most games for me. I think I mentioned this on a recent podcast, but I earlier this year I went on a...
You've been beating a lot of games.
Well, not anymore, but in the first couple months of the year I beat most of the games I played. And pretty much the result of that was that I hated most of them by the time I was done. Because most of them either wear out their welcome by the end, or the endings are stupid and boring. Or just not...
Yeah.
Or just mangled. I don't know. Most developers don't know how to end a game or come up with a good story that is worth ending, usually.
Yep. I don't know. I've had a lame year of games.
Well, so I mean, they're not like this year.
I'm just
Halo
trying to think
2's
back.
Not this year.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
Well, neither is Gears of War 2.
It's this makes me lame, but it's been so infrequently that I finish a game that the games that I finish, I only finish because the game is worth playing for me all the way up through the end.
Yeah.
That's
traditionally how it is for me, but
I'm trying to think. Not in recent memory. I just because I'm too lame.
Yeah, I would say Assassin's Creed was a pretty big example of that for me.
Yeah, that was a big example for many people who played that game. It sounded like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't wait for Assassin's Creed 2. Assassin's Creeds.
Assassin's Creeds is set in the Renaissance, apparently. I'm so frustrated that these games aren't just actually set where they're set, instead of being set in a box, like where you imagine it's set somewhere else. I don't know. Okay, so Tom Bryan, he writes a movie proposal for us. Shadow of the Colossus, Streets of L.A. Instead of fighting 16 Colossi, there's a... Colossi? I don't even know.
It's Colossi.
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 There's a blacklist of 16 of L.A.'s best underground street racers. But Shadow's been out of the game for years. Will he risk it all in a pink slip race against Colossus and win back his girl? Or will he get so caught up in the fast lane that he himself becomes the monster? Shadow of the Colossus, Streets of L.A., Cinemas Everywhere, 2010.
Sweet.
Tom Bryan, Manchester, England. That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
I support this film.
Need a poster for that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe someone can make that.
Someone wants to make a poster for that.
Yeah.
A poster.
Do it. Let's see, what else do we have here? We have a hilarious email from Mike Phoenix.
Mike Felix?
Mike Felix, I'm sorry, who writes, "Hey guys, long time listener," etc. He found it. He points out that our podcast is about Far Cry 2, IGN.com quotes, wizard sound bits, and funny bird noises. So anyway, the gist of his email is that he basically had been equating our voices to people he's seen on TV and decided to actually find out what we really look like. And he was disappointed with what we actually look like, because I think we just look like dudes.
I was the most disappointing, apparently.
Yes. So,
sorry, man. I don't know.
He found pictures of what his mental images of us look like, including, hilariously, pictures of me and Nick, or like fictional pictures that sort of actually do kind of represent.
Let me see this.
The basic like kind of properties of us.
Like body shape. Nick is
maybe the same picture.
No, well, yeah. Oh, okay. Nick is taller than I am. Like, I've got more hair, I guess. Like, I'm
scruffier generally.
Yeah, he's like scruffier. And I'm less shaven. I wear button down.
Am I the third person here? Am I Big Bird?
Jake is Big Bird.
All right, I guess that's actually the opposite of me, given that I'm a sort of tall, paunchy, bald guy. But
Big Bird is tall.
Yeah, but he's not the other things.
You're not paunchy.
A little bit.
Well, but yeah. So is Big Bird.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Big Bird is me. Anyway, this email is going to be kept on a shelf forever. I never looked at again.
Well, I might put it on a forum or something.
Yeah, I know. We should share what you and Nick and I look like. Yeah. And this guy's,
I wonder who
weird.
These people are. These people that are.
I don't think the people are picturing us in what? Their mind.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, I wonder where this picture came
from.
Those guys.
I thought you were like wondering about their names.
I don't know, but I think it's the new Ultra Boost ad.
That's Dirk Drekken, and you know.
Dirk Drekken.
Dirk Drekken.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
and
chief.
His idle thumbs.
Yeah.
What?
An obscure record from
I think it's on the Mafia 2 soundtrack.
Yeah.
All right, so Tommy Lawler writes, "Hey, Thumbs, I've heard you guys talk at some length about playtesting and how it's usually in reference to Valve and how much they revere it, et cetera, et cetera. He says Bungie did a similar thing with Halo 3. Both of those companies have employed a PhD in experimental psychology, which is interesting. He says, while it's valid to want to get as much information as possible about players and how they're reacting to a game, I wonder if there's such a thing as too much testing, a breaking point. And he points out Shigeru Miyamoto, who sort of just kidnaps employees at random to play his games, sort of different than the more systemic approach.
Does he do that in addition to traditional playtesting?
I don't really know, personally.
The question is just generally, if you're stifled by too much data collection and too much focus testing, I think that the answer to that is definitely no, but a more detailed answer is probably it depends. I think, just like anything else, it's like when people at a game company will put on their forums, like, hey, what do you guys want to see in the next game? And then there's always like four or five defenders who are like, don't read this, you guys. Right. You don't want to influence the designers to just do what they're, if you post anything on here, it's going to be in the game design. So you don't want to give them a bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who look at the playtest data are the people who read these forums or the people who listen to a focus group. Are still a human being. They're not a crazy robot where you feed the playtest form in and a design document comes out. So it's how you interpret that data, how much intelligence you take, you know, when you actually look at it and what it means. And I think it's shown that Valve and Bungie are very good at that, and I'm sure other companies are bad at it, and they'll get playtest data and be like, oh, fuck, what we really need... Shit, fuck, we need a cover system. We need six more guns that have alt-fire modes. People said this. We're not... You know, no one's going to care about this game. Right. And that I think that ruins it. Or, like, you hear about... like, Google has had a bunch of graphic designers just leaving lately because... And they've been posting on their blogs saying... They've left because they've had like day long meetings where they can't make a case for a piece of art because they want to systemically check whether or not a border should be 4 pixels, 5 pixels, or 6 pixels, and they're going to run focus tests on this for the next 2 weeks before you can lay down a pixel of art in the new version of Gmail. Yeah. That's probably taking it too far. I mean, it's Google, so they can probably afford to take it that far. But
well, they can afford it financially, but
yeah, but it's
Yeah, when
I mean, they're
not
like,
psychologically.
I think that is being so beholden to your data that you're leaving no room for being a thinking human being that's paid to be doing this job in the first place.
Right.
I know that, like, at Telltale, we do very, I mean, compared to, like, Valve, we don't do very much focus testing. We have probably 15 people come in and play each episode of our game once. Sometimes we'll do a second round. But the information that you get out of that is always super amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not, and, but that said, we don't, like, a guy came in and played a Sam Max episode and wrote, make it look more like Team Fortress 2. We were like, fuck, okay, let's load up those Valve PDFs about how they do the rendering engine. We gotta get rim lights and Fong shading into our game. Like, people don't, if you do that, you're a crazy person.
Right.
Or you're making Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my response is similar. I think that one of the things, what you say is totally true about people thinking that feedback equals like a robot making the game.
Right.
Cyborg,
if you will. The case at all. Like, it's part of it. And it's not just an issue of deciding whether this is to go in or not, but it's also just being like, is your design team or your actual just developers, are they talented enough to implement this stuff in a good way? I mean,
right.
Just knowing that you need to change something is not equivalent to it being
right.
automatically
yeah.
changed.
Yes.
Like,
you don't snap your fingers and suddenly like player movement is changed or
right.
like, yeah.
Like, there's still the creativity involved with actually figuring out how that feedback should be best interpreted, as well as like the technical challenge of implementing it and all, a million other things. I mean, I think there probably is definitely a danger, as you described with the Google example, of being too beholden to data.
But that stuff is often driven by fear.
Yeah.
Mm. If you don't believe in your product, and then
right.
someone from the outside says, "Oh, well, obviously the reason that this is dumb is because of this," you're going to go home like, "You're right. That's what it is." Instead of just having the confidence to
right.
interpret yeah. or make, you know, forge your own path.
And there's also sort of a difference between pure usability stuff and more and like
yeah,
more
yeah,
vague
yeah.
kind of
right.
design, like design in the sense of like gameplay design.
And the balance of that
decisions.
Is going to be
right.
different depending on the project as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if we're like, talking about like a straight multiplayer shooter, then. You know, there are probably
right.
some very...
That's like very balance heavy.
Yeah, that's
like
something
that, right?
that you can probably look at a lot of data and go like, all right, this map is not, you know, but...
Exactly, yeah.
If you're talking about...
When you're talking about a single player, heavily scripted experience where they're trying to essentially make different
yeah,
content
I mean,
all the time.
A lot like of times that. What it comes down to with that, at least at Telltale, where we do only single player, very linear adventure gamey type stuff,
yeah.
is reading between the lines to sort of see not what people say... Not what people are asking for, but what they actually want or what they actually need. If you can look and see
right.
a common denominator in all the requests of like, okay, well, what they're actually saying is that this one element is underperforming, and this person saw it because they thought that the graphics in this part didn't look good, or this person thought that this, the, you know, whatever. I can't come up with a goddamn example of what I'm trying to say, but you kind of know what I mean.
Yeah.
Where if people are asking, you know, Jesus. You know. Anyway, I think this is answered.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Barf.
Right. Eric Leslie writes in to probably justifiably berate us for our mod scene discussion. First of all, he points out how we contradict ourselves in terms of our discussion about mods. He starts off, he says, the initial statement, it's much easier to make stuff in modern editors than old ones, and people and studios benefit from having people who want to make stuff from their games, to which he says, hooray, modding is more accessible now than it used to be. 20 seconds later... The people who play mods killed the mod community by expecting too much from the total conversions like Counter-Strike, to which he adds, oh, I guess modding is dead now, killed by its own community. 2 minutes later, people who criticize simple mods have no idea how it is to make something, but people who have played a lot of mods have more of an understanding of how much work and time is required to make a mod, to which he interprets as the masses are stupid, only the mod community that 2 minutes ago I said brought about its own demise can truly understand mods, and then he points out this is all contradictory. My response would be, there are three of us, and we don't all share the same
right.
opinion on things.
I would also say that I don't think all of these are mutually exclusive, and
I don't think that only one thing
killed mod community. I was thinking about this after getting this email, and although I don't know if I'm going to be able to directly address any of this guy's points, I guess I could kind of clarify what I was trying to talk about with just like in terms of multiplayer gaming, which is where mods mostly came from, or you know where mods mostly live, multiplayer first person gaming, at least from the get go. The biggest avenue for online gaming for a long time was basically Quake World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to play a different kind of multiplayer experience on your PC, you would install a mod into Quake 1 and Quake World. At this point,
now it's
at this point, it's if you want to play a different multiplayer experience, you load up Steam and you pick a different commercial game. There's so many more options at this point. You know, I mean, I think that was what I was kind of trying to get at that point, but I ended up sort of warbling on and on about how no one respects a simple gameplay mod anymore. But it's just,
you know,
what the audience is looking for in the PC multiplayer space. The sort of stuff that was being served only by mods is being served by commercial games at this point. I mean, the scale is way more grandiose, but at the same time, it's kind of not, because
I don't know. Like,
I don't know. I mean, you could play Headhunters or TF2 or Capture the Flag. Or regular Quake. Now you can play Left 4 Dead, Counter-Strike, TF2.
Yeah, well, I mean, remember at one point when Capture the Flag was a mod?
Yeah.
Like, when the first person made a Capture the Flag mod. Yeah. Like, that now Capture the Flag is a mode in every single multiplayer
Extra
game.
The guys who made that are a company.
Three-Wave.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I really spoke up much during that discussion, because personally, I don't really feel like I have a handle on the mod scene. It's so weird and amorphous now.
Well, I don't have a handle on the mod scene anymore, and I...
It's just... I don't know. It's like, just like... Because of what you said, though, I mean, now... I feel like
the audience,
there are so many goddamn games
like
that you can mod that I just...
Well,
every now and then, I'll be playing a game, and I'll be like, I wonder if there are any mods for this game. And I'll be like completely shocked at finding these little communities of people who still do make mods for these random obscure games that I just did not expect. It's actually hard to take... go ahead.
I was going to say, unless it's something that is notably new, like Natural Selection, it often is teams doing a very similar version of the same stuff that people were doing with Quake, for me. I mean, at least whenever I like look at ModDB and look at the top stuff, it's often Fortress Forever, or it's Black Mesa, or, you know, it's...
Mm-hmm.
But just what I was going to say about how I also admittedly am not in the mod community at all anymore, but that's because all the PC gaming communities that I followed, starting with, you know, like Reading Blues and Shaq around Quake 1, Quake 2, all those guys used to basically play Quake and then Quake and Unreal and all the mods.
Yeah.
And now all those people play the entire Steam catalog. So, you know, I mean, just there is a mod community, but it's definitely not the same people who used to be doing it.
Yeah.
I'll just add, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to find and read them all, but I think over the last couple of weeks, we have gotten a bunch of emails from people who are like, what are you talking about? There's tons of mod stuff going on.
There is a ton of
mod stuff going on.
I mean,
not as focused as
if that's true. I think if you go to ModDB, you will find that it's extraordinarily focused. I mean, that's basically the equivalent of TIGSource to the independent game community, what it is to the mod community. I mean, there's a huge database. There's a very active community.
Oh, no. I don't mean... Well, I guess what
you
I'm
mean,
saying,
like, it's since of, it's not just
specific
Quake?
Platforms. Yeah, okay. I mean, I think it's...
Right. It's not as
it's not just
centralized.
Like the people working on just have, like, one and just it engines.
Of what a mod is now... I mean, like, I don't know. I think that's changed. I mean, I think they're...
Well, I mean, the fact that, just because, like, old engines have open sourced themselves, you can develop a fully formed game that still is kind of a mod.
Right. Like, Gravity Bone, is that a mod? I don't know. Like,
I don't think so. I mean, is it? Is any commercial game developed in the Unreal Engine a mod?
Well, yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Also, things like, you know, Little Big Planet levels. I mean, people put so much time and effort into that. It's not... It's a user-created level, but is it not also a mod in a way? I mean, you're not modding the game, I guess.
No,
from
it's
a code
not.
Base.
It's a level.
That's. Well, I don't know.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think there is a difference between level creation and modding. Like, you don't need. You can make a level. For
I mean,
a game
generally, at least traditionally, the division was if you're making a level, you load up the game in the with the basic
editor.
To play a level, you would just load up the regular old game and type in whatever slash level and the name of the map file.
Right.
To load up a mod, you would almost always from the DOS prompt or from a modified shortcut, you would actually tell the engine before you load any resources.
Load up
these scripts data set that's going to be loaded on top. I mean, that's the traditional distinction, at least, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
And then whether or not it's a mod or a total conversion,
well, I guess,
whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, I think effort is being put into game, you know, into level creation in games like that, that maybe traditionally would have been.
Maybe so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah, we might have given the mod community short shrift, and if so... Sorry about that. I mean, there is a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah, I don't think any of us ever meant to say there isn't stuff being done in the mod community, but it doesn't, probably just because the stuff that the mod community did in the mid 90s ended up actually working. Mm. And like, you know, that level of variety, and a lot of the companies that started off either making mods or making expansion packs in those games ended up being real, or like Team Fortress ended up getting bought and CS.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff that people used to go to the mod space for is now found in the commercial multiplayer PC space.
Yeah, there's no equivalent of like Capture the Flag being created today. You know what I mean? Like
nothing that ubiquitous anymore. Nothing,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like the last one that truly became ubiquitous was CS.
Or yes. Dota.
Yeah.
Or, oh yeah, maybe so.
You know what? That's probably a good example. Yeah.
Yeah. Burn me.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up because we're probably long.
It's an ultra cast.
We got a bunch of emails this week, at least a few, saying, what is game? Is this some kind of fucking meme or something? What is this?
Sounds like it.
I don't know. We got a bunch of those. Anyway, I don't know.
We've probably just made a bunch of people titter, and there's a stupid 4chan bullshit thread that with a grinning smiley face or something now.
All right. Anyway, we'll I don't know, do this next week, I guess.
Yeah. If you have a question, feel free to write it into questions@idlethumbs.net.
Yep.
Oh, one thing I wanted to point out really quick was that I thought it was really amusing that Chuck Jordan, a previous guest of the show, pointed out that the guy who's doing the promo spots for Heroes on NBC right now sounds like Yoren Steve's bad Solid Snake voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you check out the latest promos for Heroes, you might hear Chris Ramo impersonating Solid Snake. Sweet. Not actually, but...
I saw that post by Chuck on Twitter, but I was at work at the time, and I forgot my headphones, and I didn't want to risk playing whatever it was like aloud on my work computer, so I didn't.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what it is. I guess it's a dude who sounds like me or Steve.
It's mostly you.
Mostly me. Okay. Well, cool.
Get ready for that, everyone.
I'm ready.
I thought there was something else, but that's it.
Okay, cool. Bye.
Bird noises. I'm Big Bird.
Bronze string.
It was wild.
What? What did you say?
He goes wild.
Oh.
Like the crowd goes wild.
Video game.
Merrick, this is for you.
Played Tecmo Bowl.